Hi everyone, Ethan here. This week we're doing The Martian, so he was isolated from the world, and so I figured I would do the same. You know, today with technology and the phone and the internet, it's like everything's so constant, and so yeah, I'm taking a break basically from everything. I'm going to take about a week and just sit here in the studio. I've turned everything off. I'm just completely alone. I have food, I have water, I have potatoes. And I'm just going to be completely by myself.
Hey, E-Man.
Hey, what's up? What's up, Ben?
You want to go to lunch?
I'm kind of doing this whole isolation.
Oh, come on, man. We're doing tacos. What are these potatoes? You don't want those?
It's Taco Tuesday.
Barbacoa, baby.
Okay, yeah. I'll meet you in the front in a minute.
Sounds good.
Well, hey, listen, I was here for a good 6-7 minutes before I started recording, and I think that was enough to really kind of understand what he was going through for the year or so that he was up there. So I think I learned a lot. I'm a survivor, so yeah, I hope you enjoy the show. Ben, wait, I want a churro, too!
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Bad science. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I am your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and we are talking about the much-anticipated film, The Martian. With my guests, first, we have a wonderful comedian you've probably seen on Jimmy Kimmel or Comedy Central. It's Neil Nanda.
Hey, what's up, man?
How's it going, Neil?
I'm wonderful, man.
Haven't seen you in a bit.
It's been a while, man. Yeah. Thanks for the mint medley tea.
Absolutely. Neil's drinking a mint medley tea, which you can get at Trader Joe's, I believe, and he seems to be enjoying it.
It's real good.
Okay, it's real good. A review from Neil Nanda. We also are joined by Dr. Bethany Ellman, a professor of planetary sciences at Caltech and research scientist at Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Hi, pleasure to be here.
How's it going, Bethany?
It's going very well.
You're also drinking a tea.
I am drinking a tea. It's a nice green tea.
Ah, nice green tea. Where'd you get that?
You know, I think it's a Steve Smith's tea ordered online, Amazon.com.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow.
Scientists.
Yeah. Getting their teas custom from the internet.
Internet tea.
Okay. So there's so much to get to with this film. I really feel like we could do several podcast episodes about it. And I do kind of understand why so many people wanted us to do it. There's a lot to get to. But let's just start with your thoughts of the film. When did you first see the film? What's your take on it?
Well, I saw the film when it first came out, you know, within a week or two. I wasn't one of the ones lining up, but I was eager to see it, eager to go in the theater because I'd heard a lot about the book by Andy Weir, and all the engineers at the Jet Propulsion Lab were talking about it and how it nailed a lot of the process for how we go about exploring space.
Great. And there was some sort of collaboration, right, for the movie?
Yeah, there was a lot of consultation happening in terms of, hey, if this happened, you know, how would this really work?
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of back and forth.
Okay, and what did you think when you left the theater?
I enjoyed the movie. I loved just kind of Matt Damon's attitude when he was stuck on Mars. You know, he's going to figure this out.
Yeah.
Not give up. Use the science. Use whatever he can to MacGyver it.
I agree. There was some very nice, inspirational moments where he's kind of like having a good time with it. I feel like in a lot of these movies, they're like going crazy and figuring it out. But he was just kind of like an everyday guy.
Yeah, there was a little bit of crazy getting in there at the end with the Captain Blondebeard or whatever it was.
Right.
But, you know, it took 500 days to get to crazy. Before then, he was doing really well.
Yeah, he was fine.
Yeah, 500 days of crazy.
500 souls of crazy.
Souls of crazy.
Souls, yeah.
Indeed.
I still don't know what a soul is.
Why don't you school
us here? It is a Martian solar day.
There it is, the Martian solar day.
How long is that?
It's about 24 hours and 40 minutes or so, so just a hair longer than an Earth day. It just so happens Mars happens to rotate at almost the same speed as Earth.
Wow. Is that how normal is that? Because I would assume it was a much different day.
Yeah, it could be crazy, but it just so happens Mars is relatively Earth-like in this way.
Okay, interesting.
I had no idea. I was just like, all right, cool, 30 more souls.
Yeah, because at one point he says the time, too. He says, like, it's 6:35 here on Sol 19. I was like, 6:35? What are you talking? What time hemisphere are you on? What does that mean? But I guess it's, like, very similar.
Yeah. So, you know, keep track of time on Mars, very similar to Earth. So when the sun's at a certain angle, it is 6:35 a.m.
Okay.
Wow.
Deal. Well, what was your take on the film when you saw it?
I thought it was too long. It was probably an hour to an hour and a half too long.
Right, sure.
Wait, you wanted a 30-minute film?
I wanted a 30-minute film. It was 2.5
a
hours.
Short film.
It was 2 hours and 25 minutes.
Yeah.
I watched it last night, and I counted
It's a long
minute.
Film.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I love Matt Damon. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was a comedy. I know it won Golden Globe for Best Comedy.
That's correct. It won the Best Motion Picture for Musical or Comedy and Best Actor Musical or Comedy to Matt Damon.
Yeah, it was nor musical, neither a comedy.
Correct, yeah.
But it did have some. It had Kristen Wiig and Donald Glover.
Right, but they weren't necessarily being funny. It wasn't like filled with jokes or anything.
No, I laughed maybe twice.
Yeah, controversial characterization, but I thought it was hilarious. Actually, everything that Matt Damon had to do and the quirky NASA guys.
Okay,
so I thought it was funny, but I agree that I would not have categorized it as a comedy either. I would have tended to stick it in the drama category. But
yeah,
I guess
exactly.
I was trying to straddle that line.
I think there were a lot of funny parts also, but the way that a lot of action movies are funny, or the way a lot of drama movies are funny, where it's like, oh, it's nice that there's comic relief and such, but I wouldn't, yeah, say it's a comedy film.
Right.
So.
But I liked it. Oh, that was a good movie.
Okay, great.
I enjoyed it, yeah.
Yeah, I liked it as well. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was fun. I like that it was seemingly accurate. Like, there wasn't too many parts where I just felt like, oh, that's totally ridiculous. You know, it really felt like, oh, this is kind of a, you know, legit space movie.
I just wouldn't know. I have no idea. Like,
well, we're going to get into it.
Yeah, there were a lot of things where I was like, is that accurate?
Yeah.
Which I guess we'll find out.
There are some things that are not, but there's a lot that is. So,
okay,
you know,
okay.
We can talk about it.
We'll separate the fact from fiction here today. I have a lot of questions. But before we even get into that, I saw in one of your emails that you were saying that it's a big week for those of us who are deciding where to send rovers to Mars, that there's like a Mars 2020 science team that is having like pre-workshop meetings.
Yeah, this is a big week. It actually starts tomorrow. We are deciding where to send the next rover, which is going to launch in the year 2020. And there's a whole planet out there. As anyone who's watched The Martian can appreciate, there are long distances to be considered. You can't get everywhere. And so we as a science community have to decide what is the golden spot for this rover. Where does it get to go?
Speaking of golden spot, are you considering Acidalia Planitia?
No, you know, Acidalia Planitia is not on the list, nor is Schiaparelli Crater. Following the water on Mars, looking for life, those are not the most exciting places to go, but they are flat places to land. And so, you know, the Martian did nail that. They got that right. Those are good places, flat places to land, and so they are safe. But we're going to try to go somewhere a little bit more exciting from the life front with our 2020 rover.
Oh, what does that mean, exciting life on
the life front? That means we're going to go someplace where there was a lot of evidence for water in the past flowing through rocks. And we're going to take a look at those rocks and see if there are any microfossils or biosignatures of life with this next rover.
I hope you find it.
I hope so, too. So it's a big week. But it was nice, actually, to kick off this week by watching The Martian, which had a little fun with Mars exploration before we get into the work later
Great.
In the week.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny how, because a lot of movies will start and it'll say, you know, Boston, Massachusetts. And we all know what that means. And this movie started by saying Acidalia Planitia. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But I thought that was really funny how it, like, set a location. Instead of saying Mars, it just said, like, a very specific location on Mars. And I was like, who knows what that is? I have no idea what that means.
Her. She knows what that is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and the few hundred other scientists who are going to be here. But we're a pretty, like, nerdy
like,
select
oh, cool.
group. But you, too, can go online on mars.google.com and check out all these landforms if you want to know where they are. Retrace Matt Damon's steps.
Great.
That's
yeah, let's do
cool.
that.
I'm going to do that, actually. That
do
sounds
it.
Really fun.
Do it.
Sweet.
It's fun. Explore Mars.
So at the beginning of the film, there's a windstorm. I've guess. Or maybe it's a regular storm. It's dark, so I don't really know what kind
dark
of storm.
Dark and stormy.
It is. Yeah, it's
but
dark
not
and stormy.
Like the drink.
Yeah.
No, a worse
no,
version.
No blue moon, yeah.
So I was wondering, like, does that happen? How often it happens? And why weren't they more prepared?
Yeah, and this is one of the aspects not accurate.
Okay,
so Mars does have amazing dust storms. In fact, Mars is actually just coming out of an amazing dust storm. Some of you may know that the Opportunity rover hasn't phoned home for months because
right.
it was the sunlight that would have powered it was blocked out by the global dust storm. So storms on Mars are real, and they fill the atmosphere with dust. But The but is that strong winds on Mars are not real. Gotcha. So the atmosphere on Mars is like 0.6% the thickness of Earth's atmosphere. Mm. So even if you get that atmosphere moving along super fast, there's just not a lot of force there because there's not a lot of molecules to move. Mm. And so unlikely to get impaled with a piece of hardware by a storm on Mars. You're more likely to get coated in dust such that you can't see.
Okay, so it wouldn't be, emergency evacuation situation.
Yeah, so the windstorm can see big, strong winds. Yeah, not Martian, but they got the dusty part right. Okay. Hard visibility.
But would they know that that was going to happen? Or would it be, could it happen all of a sudden?
That was pretty quick.
Okay. Oh, you're saying it was too quick?
It was a little quick. I mean, dust storms locally, they can rise up. That was a little quick on the scale of, it was like basically fine, 10 minutes later, boom.
Everything.
It was
a
minute later. It was moments later. They were like, all right, we got to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the decision was to walk on the surface to a different vehicle, which I also thought was weird. And it was like, we have to leave now and we're not in the right thing. Like, we're not connected to, the MAV in order to leave. And so we have to go on foot in the storm to the MAV. And I just thought, like, this seems like a weird series of events.
Well, I think that part actually made sense because they're going to park their big old rocket away from their habitat module so that they don't, pulverize their habitat when they take off. And I think they had to walk because if you think back to that rover vehicle thing that they had, that didn't hold six of them?
Oh, right. Of
them. Yeah.
Right.
So I think they put on their big old spacesuits to be safe and then had to march on out there operationally.
And then got hit by a satellite.
Got hit by a dish that the winds would not have been strong enough to do that. But hey, we had to strand Matt Damon somehow.
Yeah.
Matt Damon had to get stuck somehow.
Right. Okay. So two things when that was happening. One is that there was an issue Michael Pena was dealing with where the MAV was tilting because of the wind. And so, A, it seems like what you're saying is that the wind wouldn't be strong enough to make something tilt like that. And then, B, my main question was like, if you know the winds are that strong, would you make something that is susceptible to tilting like that or falling over, right?
So I think if we accept that in the Mars of the Martian that there are strong winds, that would be a problem with the big old rocket that you have to escape off. I mean, it's not designed to tilt in the wind, but you're also not going to try to land some sort of stabilization structure because that would take a lot of extra work to try to land some stabilization thing. Extra weight, you have to bring down to Mars. So, I mean, if we're going to accept that they had big winds, absolutely, this would be a problem. Big winds tilting over their rocket so that it might not be able to blast straight off Mars.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I thought that was so, I don't know, that raised my ears a little bit. I was like, whoa, your escape, the only way that you can escape the planet is like, the wind could knock it over. It seems so, elementary.
Space exploration's hard, man.
What?
Lots of risk.
It's hard? Really?
Why would it be? Why is it so hard?
I know.
In the movies, it's so easy usually.
Figure it out.
Yeah, just figure it out.
Yeah.
Seemed like they figured it out.
They did figure it out. Yeah, that was the fun part.
The other one is the rod, or I don't know exactly what it was, but like piece of metal that like punctures his suit, and he gets back in and he like takes it out and he says that like it sealed his suit, the rod. And so I was curious about that because it would seem to me that if something were to, I don't know, puncture your suit that, like, air would get in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think what he said, and it kind of makes sense to me, you have to get lucky, but then again, that was sort of the point, that he was lucky, that he got impaled, so his suit started leaking, but then he said something along the lines of, like, the blood coagulating.
Oh, right.
Sealed up the area around where he got impaled, so good for clotting.
Okay, good for clotting. Sometimes you want a clot.
You want a clot.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want a clot. So he's a botanist, but I was just wondering if if you're an astronaut, if you get medical training no matter what, because he seemed like he really knew what he was doing with the whole surgery aspect of it there.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, like a lot of field units in the Army, you get basic field medic training so you're able to deal with situations. I'm not an expert, not an astronaut, don't know, but that's my sense of that the training is pretty extensive because you have to learn how to deal with stuff when stuff goes wrong.
Right. That makes sense. Do you have any basic training in anything?
No. I don't know anything. I'm learning so much right now.
Okay, great. What about the gravity? It seemed like the gravity was like the same as Earth when they were walking around, or like very similar.
Yeah, so the gravity's lighter on Mars. It's about quarter third. But yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. They didn't really bounce around, and I don't know whether we should interpret if that's because they got used to it, so they were no longer like skipping around like little kids, uh-huh. or right. if it was just because their suits were heavy.
Yeah,
and so they were just moving deliberately. I don't know. I didn't think too much about that one. That's a good catch.
Okay.
I didn't think about it.
Well, because usually if they're on the moon or on like a weird planet, you're right. Yeah, there's more of a bounce house effect, and here they just I don't know. They were seeming like everything's kind of normal-ish. So I was just curious if that's the case.
No, gravity's lighter, but I'm thinking that maybe it's the heavy spacesuit that's kind of keeping them from skipping. It's not the gravity on Mars is not as light as the moon though, so it's like an in between
Earth and moon. Gravity.
Okay. Yeah,
I'll buy it. So here's a big one. He grows food.
Yeah.
On Mars.
I liked that part.
I love that too.
I did too, but I had no idea if that was possible.
Me neither. He uses their poop, which is tightly sealed. Is that a practice? Does that happen?
I actually am not familiar with astronaut waste handling, but it seems to me to make sense. Like you suck the water out and then you stick the dry stuff somewhere else. I mean, that kind of makes sense.
Sure. I mean, I like how organized it was. It was nice that there wasn't just astronaut poop all over this new planet.
That'd be kind of gross.
Yeah, but also I wouldn't be shocked. You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, that's totally a human thing. We're just to like the
throw
first
poop.
Yeah, exactly. We're the Mars. First ones on the new planet, and we're just going to poop all over the place.
Turn Mars into New York City.
within a week.
Poop, yeah, it's a deli.
Just smells for some reason.
Also, off of pooping onto plants, which is maybe a little more pleasant. I loved the part where he had to figure out that he needed to set up a greenhouse and just got moving on it with those potatoes. And that is pretty realistic. We from all the measurements that we've made with landers and rovers, the Mars soil is such that you could grow things in it with a little bit of fertilizer, a little bit of nitrogen kind of fertilizer, which conveniently supplied and available. So this was realistic. And I think a lot of people get excited, about the prospect of growing things on Mars. And as Matt Damon's character points out in the movie, first colonist, he's growing crops and harvesting crops.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great.
That's pretty cool.
I like that too, and I liked also, how he had to figure out how to get more water somehow, and so he's turning rocket fuel into water.
Yeah,
which is pretty impressive.
Was that all made sense?
I have to say, I am not a physical chemist, and so the details. So it does make sense that you have to oxidize your hydrogen, your H2. You have to turn it into H2O. So you need to add oxygen. As for the exact details of his setup, I couldn't speak to it, but the principles are right on.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was the fire, right? It was the
yes
to combust it to combust to get the O in there.
Right.
I was also thinking, and this happens to me all the time while watching movies. Like, I would be so screwed.
I'd be so dead. I'd eat the potatoes and die.
Yeah.
That's what would happen.
And I'd complain about it the whole time.
Like, potatoes again?
Potatoes again and blame my friends for leaving me.
Yeah.
I mean, so you wouldn't be able to figure out, right, how to do any of that stuff.
No. Absolutely.
I wouldn't even know where to start.
I probably could barely use a microwave. I'd probably be like, oh, these potatoes are cold again.
Eating it today.
Yeah.
I mean, would you feel confident being there? Like, I can farm stuff and I can make water.
This was one of my favorite parts of the movie was Matt Damon, the MacGyver character, just, figure out how to make it happen, right? Like, and he kind of says this at the end when he's lecturing to his class. He's like, you're going to feel like you're going to die, and you have to push through that, and you have to figure it out. Oh, what's the next step? Not to die right now.
Yeah.
And then not to die right now. And then not to die right now. And just figure it out. Work the problem.
Yeah.
And I really like that kind of attitude, that ethos. And he had a sense of humor while doing it.
That's true. I would assume that there's like pamphlets or like some sort of like book that they put on the space shuttle that just has like basic, here's how to farm, here's how to make water, here's how to
library just in case. I have no idea. You'll have to get on someone on the show who's been in the astronaut corps and can talk about some of these things. But I mean, I can say that astronaut training is so broad because you basically become a mechanic, a medic, a pilot. You gain, like, you just train and gain all these crazy skills that you would otherwise have, you know, no normal need for. So it's like this amazing training, but you still can't keep everything in your head. So maybe there is some sort of like how to do everything manual.
I would hope so. Yeah. I kind of need that just for me.
Yeah, I need that for just life.
Life. How do you oil change?
How to do everything.
My car.
Like, look, see manual.
Yeah.
Someone should write that.
Yeah. Neil?
Yeah, I'll work. Just me?
You're going to work on that?
I'll work on it.
All right, thank you.
I'll get back to you guys. Amazon.
What was I going to say? Most of the astronauts in the movie didn't seem particularly old, and yet the training you're talking about sounds like really intense. You know what the like average age is for an astronaut?
You know, I don't know that off the top of my head. My sense is it's somewhere between 30 and 50 years old.
Okay, that makes sense. Just seems you'd have to be so accomplished and know so much, and but also be physically, you know, ready for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm already physically drained.
Yeah.
Right?
I have no training.
And like, it's not even like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
I know. I just feel like my peak was probably like 23, 24. But then again, by that point, I probably don't know that much.
So I didn't know anything. Weird,
didn't know anything.
Nothing. I didn't know anything.
So
could barely read.
And today?
Barely read.
not much change.
Not much change.
Okay.
I had a question about the fire.
Yeah, go.
Yeah. So they didn't seem to have much flammable stuff on board. Is that common in, you know, space exploration? They try not to have flammable things?
Yeah, definitely try not to have flammable things because fire is dangerous in a few ways. It's dangerous like directly, and then it also eats up all the oxygen if you've got a fire going. So avoid fire. And, you know, some of that is a legacy that's probably built into the DNA of the astronaut program because I don't know if you remember, but one of the early Apollo tragedies, Gus Grissom and two colleagues burnt up in a fire that was on the launch pad. They couldn't get them out of the capsule in time. And so even though they were on the ground waiting for launch rather than in the air, they died because of fire, because it consumed all the oxygen in the capsule. And so it's kind of built into the DNA of the program. Avoid fire at all costs.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. He says at some point, right? He says like
NASA doesn't really...
NASA hates fire because it kills people in space or something like that. So that's like mostly...
Avoid fire. Fire's not good.
Fire's not good. But they make a bomb towards the end of the movie.
Another instance use of fire. Firepower or something.
Yeah.
Which that was another moment where I don't know. It felt unnecessary to me. Of course, coming from a place of I don't know anything about how to solve anything in space.
Right.
But they're like, I think the problem was they were going too fast and they needed to slow down quickly. And so I just couldn't believe that there was no like thrusters or like a brake program.
Well, they tried to use their thrusters, but their thrusters weren't getting them there in time. She did the calculation with the thrusters and it still didn't fully solve the problem. So they needed to figure out a way to shed that speed.
And that was
that was the best thing. I guess they had something like 35, 40 minutes, I think it was to solve the problem before they were gonna come around the planet and rendezvous with Matt Damon and his spinning capsule. So they had like 40 minutes to work the problem, figure out what to do. And I guess that was the best answer that they could come up with in short time period was to blow the atmosphere out.
That is such a fourth grade response to that. Just like, build a bomb, blow it up. Go the other way.
It's true.
Really? Yeah. And he says also that it's like five times more powerful than a stick of dynamite. He's like, there's like five dynamites. And at that moment, I was like, what? Yeah. Why
just,
so powerful?
And they just
powerful?
Had the stuff to make it. They just had the...
He was a chemist. That's what she said.
That was the shtick there. But you said fourth grade response was the bomb. I don't know. The fourth grade response is, I'm going to be Iron Man.
Right. Oh, yeah. That too. Yeah.
Another moment of, ridiculousness. But yeah, I thought the bomb could have been, I don't know, either a lot less powerful because it seems so dangerous. It worked like a charm, so what am I talking about?
I mean, yeah, it worked. So,
obviously.
I think
bombs are the solution. Duh.
You can build them quick, and they work.
Let's get a chemist.
Yeah, I think they're lucky they didn't blow up their spaceship, but then again, that wouldn't have been a great movie ending.
Right.
It would have been realistic, though, if they blow up the whole spaceship, and then at the end it was like, may this be a lesson. Don't use bombs for every problem you have.
Maybe they just should have not got Matt Damon. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Also, don't go back for him. Well, okay. So I have so many things that this is bringing up. So one, let's talk about what you mentioned, which is the glove Iron Man move. That also was a moment to me of like, wait a minute.
That didn't seem to make sense to me either.
You're going
to
purposefully pierce your spacesuit in space?
Well, so it's the same issue, right? You have to figure out some sort of a way, because he was going to end up short, right? They weren't going to be able to get close enough to each other. So he had to figure out some way to get some sort of thrust.
Right.
Right.
And the only thing he could think of is releasing air from his suit. He didn't have the kind of suit with him that the commander had that had the little thruster packs on it. So he had to figure out a way to create his own thruster. So it's not a bad idea. I don't know that it would have had the amount of power that...
A lot of power.
Power and then also the control.
Yeah, although that was a pretty crazy-looking path. It was that whole rescue attempt. A lot of things had to work just right for it to work.
Right.
That's so true. And it was really... So, yeah, one, I love your defense of this film. Let me just say that. You are very much...
Yeah, you're on board.
Well, I mean, there are some things that are scientifically wrong with it, but there are some things that they got the gist right.
I just feel like I'm talking to somebody who was a consultant on the movie is here, to do PR.
I feel like we're talking to the director or something.
Yeah, we find out your last name is Scott after this. my problem with it was that typically, from what I understand, that what you want to avoid by, at all costs is puncturing your suit when you're in space, because it'll like kill you very quickly. And so I thought that solution to puncture his glove would have the atmosphere or like the vacuum of space would have destroyed his hand or I don't know how it would kill him. I just assume it would kill him.
Well, I mean, so he was going to be dead if he didn't reach the ship.
Yes.
So given the choices of dead for sure and dead maybe, I'm going to pick dead maybe. I'm okay with dead maybe.
Sure, dead maybe.
Dead maybe.
Yeah, I think desperate measures call for desperate measures. I think it was at the point where he's like, whatever I can do to not die.
Yeah, but wouldn't it, I guess that's my question, is do you think it would have at least destroyed his hand?
Well, so what's going to happen is that your suit is pressurized. It's pressurized from a tank on the suit, and that tank is working hard. It's trying to pump air in the suit to keep you pressurized. Like, that's what the system's designed to do. So if you've got a hole in your glove, that tank's just going to keep pumping out to try to compensate for the air you're losing through the glove.
Okay.
So as long as the suit stays mostly pressurized, you're not going to die instantaneously from a leak.
Okay.
Right? Mm. It's like a competition between that tank pumping out air and the leak losing it to space.
Right. Okay. And would you eventually lose oxygen? Is that...
Oh, eventually, sure. I mean, if he missed them, he'd just Iron Man out through his
space.
Glove into space and eventually suffocate due to lack of oxygen or something equally unpleasant.
Okay. And then she was kind of like on a tethered thing also. I guess, and then he kind of grabbed that and they were able to finagle or whatever. Is that somewhat realistic? They usually like on a tethered... situation.
Yeah, so I am definitely not an expert in astronaut space maneuvers, but she had some sort of like chair that she was sitting at that had like thruster sort of power, so she was able to thrust around. But as a safety measure, in order to keep from thrusting away from the spacecraft, they clipped her in just as you'd like clip in if you were climbing, or at least most people, unless you're free soloing it. But clip in makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. I was frustrated when they waited so long until reeling her back in, because they were like kind of spinning for a little bit
to get that beautiful pan shot of the orange red tether against space with them wrapped up in it.
You need some good
wasn't
orange
it dramatic?
And blue in it. Of
it
course,
was dramatic.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, I also thought that shot just took too long.
So long. Just reel them in. They both have the rope or whatever it is. Like, bring them in. And then I thought it was really funny that same guy who was waiting to reel them in. So. He was there at the, I don't know what to call it, the opening of the spaceship with the chemist, before they had the plan, before they knew they had to make the bomb. And they were just hanging there in their spacesuits, and they were talking about the plan, and they were saying, like, okay, we're going to reach him in 40 minutes. So we have that amount of time to figure it out. And the both of them were just waiting, like, as if they were going to grab onto Matt Damon at any moment.
I 100% agree. I was not sure, number one, what they were doing. Number two, why they weren't clipped in. Like, when the guy, like, dropped the bomb right. and then was having to, like, jump from spacecraft to... I'm like, where is your clip-in? I mean, it wouldn't take that long to
safety
just go
precaution
to clip
here.
In. Like, safety, man.
And right. why are you not going to help? Are you just assuming you're going to hang there for 40 minutes?
Yeah,
like,
I was not
all
sure.
hands on deck here.
Yeah, I have to say, I was not sure what the plan was there either.
That was so funny to me.
Safety last.
Safety last. NASA. Plan the least. Okay, how JPL was founded. Do you know this tale?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and they pretty much nailed it. It's legend but true, which is that JPL started on campus at Caltech in the aerospace laboratories, although I'm not sure they were called the aerospace laboratories. It was the beginning sort of rocketry in the space age, and some of the students and postdocs were making rocket fuel and wanting to test rockets. And Caltech thought, maybe not the smartest thing right in the middle of campus. So they sent him up to the Arroyo Seco up on the outskirts of Pasadena and said, do it there.
Test your rockets over there.
And that's how JPL was born.
And there was like a few experiments that went wrong and like had like there was fires and then they got it right, supposedly.
You know, I don't know that I'm sure that some experiments went wrong and some experiments went right. I don't know that there are any particular hugely dramatic instances. Did you do some Wikipedia?
I did some very quick. Well, on the JPL website, they talk about
it. What did they say?
It says, where is it? It says four times on the first day in 1936. They tried to test
1936.
Yeah.
What? They were doing rocket.
I would not trust anybody with anything in 19. I wouldn't.
They
trust...
were thought to be crazy. It was a time of like the only time rockets were talked about was like weird sci-fi comics.
Right. Probably the Twilight Zone.
Exactly. Yeah. Twilight
probably
Zone
probably wasn't even out then.
Twilight Zone wasn't even popular. And it says on their last attempt, they accidentally set fire to their oxygen line, which whipped around shooting fire.
That sounds bad.
Yeah.
Sounds about 1936. That sounds like what would happen.
Sounds like, yeah, pretty normal for that time.
Early days of rockets.
But it says, yeah, these were the first rocket experiments in the history of JPL, and that they tried again half a month later, November 15th, 1936, and that's when the experiment worked.
Oh, very nice.
And they were known as the Rocket Boys.
There you go.
That makes sense. That was cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Not necessarily a...
fun.
Very creative name, but it's cool. Sounds cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's awesome. They said that his body at one point, I forget who says it, but somebody, they're talking about like they don't want to get pictures of Mars or like release it to the public because
pictures
people
of dead astronauts.
Right. Pictures of dead astronauts.
Yeah.
And
especially in this day and age, it'd be trending. Yeah, there'd be hashtag
all
dead
over Twitter.
Martian. Yeah.
Yeah, or whenever the Martian is, which is probably like in the future a little bit when there's something beyond Twitter.
Right,
which sounds frightening. I don't know what that would be. So he says, there's a line where he's like, well, it's not going to decompose, man. You know, like that body's just going to be there. And so is that, why is that? Because of the atmosphere on Mars or because of the suit or...
Yeah, well, bodies mostly decompose on Earth because little microbes eat them.
Oh, okay.
Mm. And if there's, if you're inside a suit and there's no little microbes, you're just going to stay there.
Just going to stay, like, intact?
Well, like, I guess, think of the bodies, like, on the top of Everest.
Oh.
Yeah, similar idea, fewer microbes.
I just thought that was ice that... kept those.
Mars is cold too. Cold, cold, dry, no life, almost like the top of Mount Everest.
Boom.
Okay.
Yeah. Little bugs hate the cold, which is something I have in common with little bugs.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Little bugs have got it right.
They got it right.
Yeah. They deserve a lot more credit than we give them.
True.
Okay. So, one of my most frustrating things about this movie is that he couldn't get in touch with anyone back home or the space station for the bulk of the movie. Eventually he like finds that rover.
Oh, this was my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, I thought that was strange too. I agree with you.
Was my favorite. Okay, some disagreement.
Wait, so which aspect of it was your favorite? What do you mean?
Oh, my favorite is how he figured out how to eventually talk to NASA again.
I mean, I dug that too. You're right. That was cool.
He had to go out and dig up like the remains of the Pathfinder mission. Like, go on a trek, harvest the whole Pathfinder lander, stick it, bring it back to the HAB, make it work. That was
pretty cool.
Awesome.
I was curious if it was a real thing. I assume
it landed in Acidalia, Planitia, July 4th of 1997.
Wow.
It was the first rover that was sent to Mars ever.
Oh.
So it landed on that little platform pedal thing with the camera that he brought out. And then that little robot that was driving around, that was the Pathfinder rover. That was the first rover on Mars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
So that was like my favorite part, because part of my day job is I get to help drive rovers on Mars and select where they go. So it was really like a nice shout out to, you know, the robotic space program to have. It really saved the day in terms of Matt Damon.
Yeah, you saved Matt Damon's life.
Did. Robotic program saved Matt Damon's life.
That's
yeah,
pretty
absolutely.
Sweet. And so that all makes sense as far as like you could dig it up and it would still work the way that it worked. And
probably. Yeah, they had some back and forth at the very beginning of, oh, what do you think happened to it? You know, and they thought just some component broke. So assuming he was able to bring it in and had the tools to fix it. Yeah, sure. Working satellite dish.
Yeah. And he would know where, like, is it still up there? Do we have it back?
No. So nothing that we sent to Mars so far comes back. It all just stays on the surface.
Whoa.
Yeah, because otherwise you'd have to, like, land a rocket to launch it back off.
Oh, right. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So, in my head, I just saw, like, all these rovers collecting rocks and whatnot and then bringing it back. But yeah, it doesn't make sense to bring it back, I guess, because we don't have that technology.
Although the next rover that we're going to launch in 2020, it's going to collect samples that hopefully we are going to send a rocket and then bring them back. Bring them back.
Bring them back.
Just like Matt Damon, man.
That's great. So my question, I guess, was more, and you're right, I did love that aspect of the film, but why wouldn't they have on the habitat there, like some backup generator, communicator. Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed to be a little sloppy because even the rovers have low gain antenna, high gain antenna, UHF antenna. Mm-hmm. So there are three ways that even the little rovers communicate. So it did seem kind of funny that the HAB did not have. I 100% agree with you.
Okay.
Probably just trying to make it difficult for Matt Damon. Yeah. Trying to make it hard on Matt Damon.
Man, this whole thing is just trying to make it hard on Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Leave him alone.
Leave Matt Damon alone. Let's get that trending.
Leave Matt Damon alone. Let him just hang out here on Earth. What's the big deal? The movie would have been more fun. So I can't remember how long it takes for them to like realize that he's up and moving, but that also, did that strike you as like it took too long? Like wouldn't, I don't know. I just assume that there are scientists like looking at, especially if we were just there, satellite images of Mars or like live footage. Well, not like live, but, you know, 12 minutes later, however long it takes to get back.
Right. And they mentioned they didn't want to put like the picture of the dead astronaut out, but like, wouldn't they be able to see it and be like, oh, well, let's look at it.
Right.
Before letting everyone else.
Or like some like monitor of like something's moving on Mars that is not normally moving, or I don't know. Sensors.
Yeah. So, well, let's see. So Mars right now has a lot of satellites in orbit around it. A few from the U.S., a few from European Space Agency, one from Indian Space Agency, actually.
Hey.
And more on the way. Oh, yeah. Shout out.
Shout out.
I think it's pretty
my
awesome.
People.
I think
what
it's
up?
Awesome. It's becoming the international
what
spot
up, Vikram?
To be. But, you know, we don't like have like real-time live continuous video feed right now, like your weather satellite or whatever around Mars the way we do for Earth. There's no like MarsNet. Some of us in NASA space exploration are talking about how useful that would be because we want to learn more about Mars weather and how it works. And hey, if Matt Damon gets stuck or there's another crew down there, then we could tell him about the weather.
Yeah.
Maybe give him a little more advanced warning of this dust storm.
That would seem useful.
But you know, it's
T minus 2 minutes at least.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. More than 2 minutes. But let's see. So right now, though, with the orbiters around Mars, it takes about 2 weeks before you get back to cover the same spot.
Okay.
So there's some time in between. So even if they sent a bunch more satellites, they still would have some kind of a repeat rate time. So that it took it was a few days, right? I don't remember.
2 weeks, I think, right?
Yeah, sometime.
Okay. I don't remember.
Movie, something like that.
I just remember by the time they realized it, I was like, yeah, duh.
They needed to wait to get a before-after image. So because they had the before that they were looking against, and then
sounds
they saw
pretty
that
accurate.
Yeah, now they
so
know
it's
it checks
pretty
out.
Accurate. I mean, it sounded like they had improved their capabilities because they had some sort of advanced early weather warning system, but it kind of sucked, so maybe that was on the ground. I don't know.
Yeah, pretty odd. Especially considering we have people that have been to Mars already. That makes me just think like, oh, they put GoPros everywhere. and we're just going to be looking at that.
We just know everything. We've seen it all.
I think it'd be super cool to have a Mars weather network to monitor it all the time. That'd be awesome.
But make it happen.
That'd be awesome. We should
Mars
make it happen.
Woman.
I agree.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, Bethany, I feel like that's a good job
it'd
for you.
Be fun to report on the Mars weather every day. You could just toss that in there. Weather in Anaheim, weather in Santa Monica, weather on Mars.
Weather on Mars, the complete planet weather.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Today's really dusty. The entire planet is really dusty. He, at one point, gets a decaying radioactive isotope out of the ground. So I was wondering, because they kind of also skim over, like, why that was there. He says
generation.
How dangerous it is.
Power
generation, for the...
Probably for their habitat module, I'd guess.
Okay.
I didn't 100% understand that either. Maybe there were more than one of them, because I was like, is that your power source for your whole habitat? Because then you'd be depowered. But it seemed like his habitat was just fine. So maybe they buried a couple of them. I don't know. That wasn't super clear.
I
didn't quite get it.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit odd. And then also... That's the plan, is to bury something that's so dangerous and put a flag? Is that, do we do that?
I think it was because they needed it for power, at least at some point in time. I didn't quite understand the details. I didn't, though, rewind, fast forward to listen to the dialogue. So maybe there is some sort of an explanation. But yeah, I didn't get that part either. I mean, but you would, if you were bringing a radioactive power source, you would want it for the power, but you would want to bury it or something just in case there was a leak.
Okay, that makes sense then. And for warmth, it would...
It would let off some heat. Yeah, and in fact, RTG is what it is on the rover, and it looks a lot like what he pulled on the ground. I think it's a radioisotope thermal generator. I don't remember quite what the acronym stands for, but that's what's on the Curiosity rover that's on what's on Mars now. It generates heat, and the heat is used to make electricity, and that powers the rover.
Oh, very cool.
Wow.
Okay, we're going to take a quick little short break, and we'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. This is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, so Donald Glover is in this movie and plays a very odd character. And
for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, too? He's not in the movie for that long, but and
did he have like one day free? Was that what happened?
Yeah, they got him for a day.
He needed to shrink all of his shoots into less than 24 hours.
This was honestly a part of the movie that made me feel like we can do without this because the movie's so long and I don't need this in there. I love Donald Glover. I think he's awesome.
Fantastic.
But the character seemed out of place for me. It was like we didn't have any real like proper intro to him. We just meet him. He's in this messy room where he's doing astrodynamics.
Drinking
a lot of coffee. And somehow he's the guy that's going to solve it. Whereas all these like brilliant NASA people couldn't figure out.
Well, he is a brilliant NASA person. He's just quirky.
He's a quirky, brilliant NASA person who has this very out of place scene, in my opinion. I don't know. I wanted to see how you felt about it, where he's explaining stuff with a stapler. And these are also really brilliant NASA people. It's not like they're Neil and I. No offense, Neil.
No offense.
And so he's explaining like the slingshot type plan, which just seems to me like a pretty basic, plan. So did that strike you at all as like odd?
Yeah, I mean, the plan didn't strike me as odd. The plan is, I think, the brilliant plan that brings them back. But I kind of agree with you about the character development of Glover's character. It's like, you know, from just a cinematic perspective, it either seemed underdeveloped or unnecessary, right? Like you have to either develop it more or check it out. But, you know, that someone had to come up with this brilliant trajectory is true, but did you need to show that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Couldn't have been any of those other NASA guys.
That's what I'm saying.
Kristen Wiig or the one Asian dude in the movie.
I mean, maybe it's in the book. I haven't read the book. Have you guys read the book?
No. I don't read. I told you.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah. Still barely
read.
Able to do it.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe that's what I kind of just the way that I made sense of it in my head. I was just like, oh, maybe it's in the book, and there's just not enough time in a movie to develop his character, etc. But yeah, I just thought like Kristen Wiig's character or one of these other, you know, Jeff Daniels or like somebody could have
thought
figured
of
that out, and we would have probably felt more inspired or
right,
whatever.
And it would have been half an hour shorter.
No offense, really, Scott. Love your films.
It was a good movie.
We all love the movie.
Yeah.
A little long.
You'd have taken some aggressive pruning shears.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What would you have cut? What
Donald
do you think?
Glover.
Okay. But like we said, that's, you know, maybe 10 minutes of the film.
Maybe.
I'm just saying, are there aspects
right.
of it where you felt like, oh, this could go?
I don't know. I mean, I felt like there were just so many moments where it was like, oh, he's not going to make it. And it's like, just cut one of those, mm-hmm. you know? It just, there was too many times where it was like, oh, now he's going to die. And it's like, well, yeah, we know, but he's not going to. And just like get to when he's not going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked, yeah, because I liked all the MacGyver stuff.
I like love that.
Figuring stuff out, etc. But you're right. There was like, I mean,
three too many moments when,
but it's also like what, 2 years or something that he's
right
stranded. Yeah. So I guess there would be a lot of problems.
Right. Oh, that's true. Fair. Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, are we going to get to the slingshot situation? The actual
sure
the science of it. So I had a question about the how they had to like remove. So they had to go really fast. That was a term used in the movie, actually.
Right. He makes fun of it. That's true.
It was like they don't usually say really fast.
When you're launching him off, when he is going off Mars.
Right. Okay. Yeah. He had to go really fast.
Yeah.
And then they had to drop a bunch of weight. And so
like
they
all the weight almost
all the weight
feels like.
So they had to take like the hood
yep.
off and like the sides and all stuff.
The windows.
The windows and then put a tarp over it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't feel like it would be scientifically. Does that make
okay,
any sense?
Okay, you know, the answer is I have no idea about the tarp in the Mars
okay.
atmosphere. They gave some sort of an explanation
yeah.
of when the resistance hits the, you're basically, when it flies off, you're going to be,
the
atmosphere is thin anyway, which is sort of true, but I'm just like, I don't really know how this works,
because
I don't know enough about
the tarp
like,
thing
rocket
didn't
dynamics.
Seem, yeah, it seemed like he would just go flying out of the thing, and the tarp
well,
came
was,
off.
Belted in.
Oh, he's belted in.
Right.
Okay.
It just, to me, what the problem...
The tarp came off. But it wasn't protecting him. See, that's the thing that I don't quite understand. Because it wasn't like, the tarp wasn't going to protect him. He was in his spacesuit, breathing, mm-hmm. fully contained atmosphere anyway. So it was like, but what I don't know is, you know, how hot does it get from like friction of a rocket going, like
yes.
wouldn't that heat up?
That
would
was
that
my
be
problem
what the
with
concern
it.
Should be? So I don't know, but I don't know these things. Like,
yeah.
that's not what I do. I'm not a, you know, aerospace engineer.
That was my main thing. I thought the whole issue was like completely crazy that they
yeah.
couldn't get like isn't the
they
point
they need to get the rocket high enough and that's the thing like it wasn't used to going as high as it needed to get in order
what
for
was
that
it what was the
to
purpose
to
of
catch
it?
It well they were lightweighting it in order to get it higher up so that it could encounter the Ares when the Ares
right
by.
But I'm saying what is like because it has rockets on it. So where did, what is it like meant to do? What
the rocket
was on?
That he took up?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I understood from the plot that they'd pre-landed it for the next crew.
Hmm.
Hmm.
They
so
pre-landed
they,
it.
They pre-landed it in Chaparelli Crater for this next mission that they kept talking about, like
to like add on to
whatever. Well, just because. Most people, when you think about exploring or colonizing Mars, you send the supplies ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
and then you send the astronauts, because you can't send it all in one big, gigantonormous ship, because you can't land that thing.
Okay.
So you split it up. So you send some supplies, some HAB modules, you might send your rocket first, and then once you're all prepared, then you send your crew. And so I think they were staging that in Schiaparelli Crater,
oh.
and so that's why he had to get there, because that's where there was a rocket just conveniently hanging around sitting
right.
on Mars.
Okay.
For the next mission.
Yeah, but it was like set up to rendezvous with that model, and he needed to make it go higher or something like that to rendezvous
right.
for his rescue mission.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense. It was like one of those things. It was like, yeah, okay, I'm following the logic train. I'm on your logic train.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought it kind of made sense too, but it did feel like quick that they were kind of explaining
it. It was real quick.
I didn't really.
There was real
and
no
for
doubt.
Such a long film, it was like, at least get me to on board a little bit here. You just skim past it. And then, yeah, just the whole taking off the top, put a tarp, get rid of the windows. It felt like, whoa, this is really, you're going overboard here with the.
With the dilemmas, with the problems.
What else could you possibly? Yeah. And the heat is where I don't know. I was just concerned about, like, if I'm on a thing with huge rockets, I want to be so protected.
Yeah, we need to get an aerospace engineer in here.
Brett?
Dissect this stuff.
Brett, come on.
Okay, great. So it'll be any minute now. Somebody will get in. If Brett says on it, yeah, it's over. Okay, so... What else is there? I mean, the duct tape thing I thought was silly.
Oh, you want me to tell you? Yeah, you want me to say what bothers the astronauts I've talked to?
Yeah, please, of course.
Okay, so something that bothers astronauts I've talked to is the shattering helmet, where the helmet actually, you know, because the helmet is actually designed to be like your car windshield, like it breaks, but it doesn't like shatter.
Okay.
And so that he had a big old hole in his helmet with lots of fractures, that bothered some of my astronaut colleagues a lot.
So wait, what would happen? Just like smaller,
Smaller cracks, that kind of spider webby crack, like your tempered glass is not designed to shatter.
To shatter,
it's designed
it's not a mirror.
To kind of it's collapse, fracture in place. Yeah, so that bothered my astronaut colleagues. So I think the duct tape solution would actually work though.
Like it would seal.
It would seal it, but their point was that helmets don't break like that.
I was watching with a friend of mine, and her comment was like, "Is it duct tape or is it like space tape?"
Oh, duct tape or space tape. I don't know. Duct tape's pretty advanced stuff, man. You can do a lot with duct tape.
You can do so much with duct tape.
I agree. I was just curious if you guys had, you know, some secret duct tape.
I don't think you need space tape. I think you just need duct tape.
Dude, I got tied to a stop sign in high school when I was a freshman with duct tape. Couldn't get out.
Yeah.
Freshman Friday. I was stuck.
Did you do something to deserve that, Neil? Or
I was a freshman. That's all I did. I just showed up to school, man. Didn't do anything.
I'm really sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah, I'm okay.
I hope those people got what they deserve.
I have no idea.
Oh, you're not still friends with them?
Nah. No.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Let me text them.
Let me text them. So the team that they, I forget already what it was called, Hermes? Or is that right?
Yeah, I believe so.
People that, like the mission, the other five of them or so.
Yeah.
I know that they told them late. That Matt Damon was still alive, which I also thought was a bit weird. Like it was much more of a big deal, like to Matt Damon. Like he was furious when they told him, like, listen, they're on a mission. We don't want to distract them. So we haven't told them that you're still alive. And he starts like yelling, what the fuck? And we see it from outside the thing.
Right.
So I was just like, why
was
it
PG-13, the movie?
Ooh, great question.
Because he didn't cuss, because they mouthed it.
Right.
And I was like, well, he can't say fuck?
Must be PG-13.
On the movie that I watched, there was definitely some F-bombs dropped, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Brett, what do we got?
Pretty sure.
PG-13.
PG-13, because you get one.
Yeah.
You get one.
One. Oh,
you
maybe
get one.
There was only one.
Maybe you were yelling.
Yeah, maybe it was you. Yeah. That's the rule. Yeah, you get one.
Only one.
You get one.
Well, it might be that there was only one.
It was probably one.
I wasn't counting.
Yeah.
Counting.
Yeah, it was probably one. But
I mean,
yeah,
it was a smooth one. I don't know.
That one was smooth, too, because I know what he said. Like, it was clear, but they got away with it.
So that's pretty funny. So as a note to filmmakers here, aspiring filmmakers, if you want to make a PG-13 movie, but you want to use F-words.
Mouth it.
But just mouth it.
Just mouth it.
Film it from outside the room.
We know. We're not like, what the what? What is the
What's
other?
He saying?
What the what?
What's he talking about? We all get it.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay, great. So... I mean, do you have more questions on the film? Because I have Mars questions, but keep going.
I had a couple. So the launch, again, they weren't able to get close enough to him. Is there an issue with, like, the atmosphere, like, with their ship getting too close to the atmosphere? Because they were like, oh, it's not going to reach. We're too far. I'm like, well, you're in the ship. Can't you just maneuver over? Can't you Star Wars over there? What's going on?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Is there, like, we don't really have X-Wings right now. And, you know, so your maneuvers have to be with thrusters. And they're not just like, you know, I'm making a zoom noise and, like, directly going in reverse with my hand, which you cannot see on the radio. But, we don't have that. And so you have to do your maneuvers relatively slowly. I mean, they're still kind of fast, but like relatively slowly. And they also couldn't go too low into Mars because then they just like fly straight by. They needed to be able to slingshot around Mars back to get to Earth. So they couldn't get too close. Otherwise, they were just going to like head out in space forever.
Yeah. It seemed like they were close.
So there was, because they had to stay on kind of a more or less on a certain trajectory in order to be able to do their slingshot thing. Okay. So yeah, they needed to like figure out how to meet that rocket taking off to the one slingshotting around.
Okay. I was also going to ask about just like heart monitor type stuff, because they thought he was dead just because there was a storm and he got hit and they left.
I think it said they explained that went away. It said the piece impaled his biomonitor, so his biomonitor went dead.
That makes sense then. Okay. That makes sense.
They explained that went away.
Nice job.
Yeah.
The Martian.
They're covering their bases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprisingly way more accurate than I expected.
Yeah. Seems like a lot of stuff really checks out. But I will say, we are talking to a fierce proponent of this movie.
Yeah, she's a huge fan.
I think it's all about...
I've got no horse in this game. I don't know about that.
I don't know about that.
I just
seem biased.
Because,
executive producer.
It is how... well, that'd be fun, man.
That would be cool.
That'd be great, actually. But yeah,
to anyone listening,
to anyone listening on future future consideration, Dr. Beth
Ridley
at Caltech,
you out there, Ridley?
If you're making another, if you're making The Martian too,
Spielberg, what's up?
Yeah, you know, I liked it because, you know, I get to work with these super creative engineers who just figure out how to solve the problem, right? Like, as an example of a real life, figure out how to solve the problem.
Great.
Okay, so the Curiosity rover, which is on Mars now, that I'm like privileged enough to be part of the team to work on driving it around, doing cool science. Okay, so we have a drill on that rover that collects, like drills into a rock and collects the Mars dust and delivers it to some instruments in the rover.
Cool.
Okay, something in the drill broke. The drill feed for the bit kind of broke, so it no longer functioned properly.
Whoa.
But the engineers figured out a way to do the drilling in this totally different MacGyvered way, where they didn't feed the bit out slowly as it was designed to do. They just stuck the bit out, and then they started using the sensors on the arm to stabilize it as it was drilling and react. And it took, you know, months to figure this out, but even though we have a broken drill, we are now again drilling on Mars because they figured out a way to make it work with what they had on the rover and these other sensors. So, like,
crazy.
This stuff happens, and it's like the way of just having to figure out how to solve the problem with what you've got is like one of the most fun parts of working in NASA.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not like you can just ship the rover back to the manufacturer and be like, it's broken. Can you send me a replacement? No, it doesn't work that way. You got to
figure it out. No 1-800 number. You can't just call, speak to someone.
Send someone out there.
So it's fun. And that's what I liked about the movie. So that's why you get this like proponent vibe, because I'm like, yeah, that's the world that I like to live in, is this red world where you like solve the problem, get it done, figure it out.
I was very into that. That's true. That is really fun.
That was really cool.
Have there ever been, to your knowledge, like a sort of rescue type mission? I mean, we've all seen Apollo 13.
Oh, astronaut style rescue?
Sure.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sure that there's stuff that's happened on these various missions that, you know, we in the public have not widely heard about, close calls and whatnot. I mean, just last week, right, there was an abort going to the International Space Station. You guys see that in the news?
No,
I don't read.
Yeah, so it was last week.
Neil, you don't have to keep saying that.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the details of what happened, but there was two astronauts were on their way to the International Space Station, but something went wrong on the way, so it was an abort, and they, you know, like parachuted down rather than making it all the way to the station.
Wow.
So, you know, stuff happens when you're trying to go
there.
To space. Space is hard.
Are you saying that there's also like secret NASA information that they don't put out? Because in the movie they stress that it's like a public funded thing.
Yeah, it's publicly funded. So all the images that we get are released within 24 hours. So that is exactly the thing. You'd have 24 hours to figure
to
out
spin it.
what your press release is going to be, because that image is coming out in 24 hours.
Wow.
Because when they hit the ground, they're either released immediately or they're released on this 24 hour thing. So that's real. You know,
why they couldn't put the image of the dead. Okay. Yeah. Cause I was like, why don't they just hide it? Just delete it.
Yeah.
I delete stuff on my phone all the time.
Well, you're not NASA.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. So they're actually following the rules in the movie, which is nice, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just assume there's like, don't know.
Yeah, there's got to be some secret.
I mean, there's probably stuff that's happened on various missions. If you were to go do a FOIA request, get all the records, you know, plunk them on your desk, go through every single transcript, every single reading of every single sensor, you'd probably find stuff that had gone wrong or almost very wrong that
I would
they had
say
to
that
recover.
We could send Neil to do it, but the dude doesn't read.
He doesn't read. Right.
It's going to take forever. Brett?
Oh,
Brett's on it. Okay, so it'll be done very soon. I wanted some updates from you on what's going on right now on Mars. I know the Insight is up there or like heading there in a few months. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it takes a while to get to Mars. The movie got that right.
Yeah.
So,
how long?
When they're at their closest, it takes about 7 months to get in between Earth and Mars. So the InSight mission launched, I believe it was May. Someone needs to fact check me on that. But it's going to be landing at the end of November. Landing pretty soon, coming up.
Wow.
Coming up.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, the Mars 2020 rover is getting built over at JPL, and we're talking landing sites this week and going to do the selection.
Wow.
Europe also has plans to send a Mars rover either in 2020 or 2022, and they're actively building that hardware.
Cool.
So that's exciting.
Okay, Europe.
So lots going on the Mars front.
Okay, great. And the opportunity, what's the latest on how that's going? Is it
still Opportunity has still not phoned home. So we're a little bit worried about Opportunity. So after the dust storm, the dust is cleared now in the atmosphere that it should be getting enough light to its solar panels. However, because of the dust storm, dust settles on solar panels. So it's not clear. So the high-rise imager, like we were talking about before, after shots of Mark Watney's landing site. So the high-rise imager has taken shots of the Mars Opportunity rover before, after dust storm, and you can hardly see it in the after shot.
Whoa.
It's just like
covered
camo. You know, those solar panels are covered. So we're hoping to hear from it. We're gonna keep. You know, NASA's keeping listening, but all kinds of funny things can happen to a rover if it goes super low power. Its clock can get offset so that it's not calling NASA at the right time. So it takes a little. So we're hopeful that Opportunity will still phone home, but looking challenging at the moment.
Okay. Unknown right now.
Challenging, yeah.
How many, machines do we have on Mars in total right now?
Let's see. I'm going to have to rattle them off because of the ones that are still working, we have, InSight's on the way, along with two little CubeSats, actually, called Marco. They're small satellites that are about the size of a shoebox.
Oh.
And they're going to demo new SmallSat technology at Mars, snap some pictures of Mars's moons on the way. So that's cool.
That's cute.
So
what's InSight, that called? Cube?
It's called Marco. It stands for Mars Cube 1.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully the first in a set of many. Anyway, they're gonna do some cool science, and they're also going to monitor InSight as it descends. But anyway, those are on the way to Mars. Opportunity, we hope, is still active on Mars.
Yep.
Curiosity is actively exploring on Mars. In Mars orbit are the Mars Orbiter mission from India.
Vikram, what up?
Shout out.
Shout out.
Mars Express and ExoMars from the European Space Agency, and Mars Odyssey and the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter and the MAVEN spacecraft from NASA.
Wow.
So there's a lot going on at Mars.
Yeah.
It's
pretty cool.
Exciting
That's
place.
Exciting. And I'm assuming, another dumb question, but I'm assuming all the agencies communicate with each other on where they're landing and going. And
yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah,
just
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, wait, you guys are here? Oh, my
what?
Bad.
What?
Good to see you.
Cool.
What's up?
Hey, man,
what's
that's
up?
My landing site, yeah. Not yours. Yeah, right. No, people talk to each other.
Okay, cool. So
that's
there's going to be several, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
That's so cool.
And what about I don't know, I don't want to say competition because that sounds weird, but the whole SpaceX privately funded space.
What about Elon Musk?
Yeah.
I mean, he's put out plans to go to Mars, and I hope he does. I mean, so SpaceX does most of their work on contract with NASA, so their biggest contracts are to launch astronauts and supply missions to the International Space Station. So NASA's putting a lot of money into SpaceX because they've got a competitive business, and they're good contract to deliver to the International Space Station. So I hope they build up their capabilities to be able to land things on Mars. I think it'd be incredibly exciting if we had a commercial company who also, you know, could do that. Just adds to the party of potential
Mars
people
party.
To do things on Mars. Yeah, so I'm super excited about the plans of SpaceX. And
okay, great. Yeah. And no fears or cons to them doing their thing and NASA, I don't know.
There's a lot more communication than I think is
let off.
Is apparent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like memoranda of understanding and lots of help kind of going back and forth in terms of how to do things in space. So yeah, it's a good partnership.
Mm. Oh, okay. That's good to know.
So if they had Elon Musk's space car,
Oh yeah.
Do you know anything about that space car? Or
you know, I don't. The Tesla that like launched in space. I don't know.
It's do you think that could have saved Matt?
Oh.
We just send them a Tesla Roadster and see what happens.
I mean, it seems like they can do anything with that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, this was really fun. Neil, you have something else you wanna ask her about? Mars?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered it. I'm trying to think if there's anything weird in the movie. No, I don't think so.
Okay. Everything checks out.
Everything kind of checked out.
Not everything checked. You know, the helmets, the impaled by the windstorm. So not everything checks
out. Right, not everything.
But they did pretty well.
Pretty good.
They got the spirit.
Yeah.
I thought none of it was accurate. I was like, you can't grow stuff. You can't, you know, there's none of the, what? Matt Damon's not going to go to the Mars? What?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Kind of makes me feel crappy that we don't just grow stuff here as much as we can. Like, I should be able to grow stuff in my apartment.
I grow stuff.
You can do it in Mars.
I got a few plants. I just started.
So I'm the weird one.
Yeah, you're the weird one. Yeah, I don't even read and I grow stuff. So
damn it. I got to grow up.
Growing cilantro.
You're growing cilantro?
So good. Yeah. It's so good, man.
Fresh cilantro.
Fresh cilantro.
Out of a potato?
No. Oh. It's a plant.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
I have a deck. It's so good, man.
Damn.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Come on.
Put it in some guac. What do you do with it?
Yeah, make tacos and I just like sprinkle it on top.
That sounds great.
It's so good. Come over.
Yeah.
Come over.
Sounds great. Love to.
Let's go
cilantro.
Right now.
Yes.
I would love a taco.
Teach me how to read.
Teach me how to read. It's all just a plan for you to learn how to read. What are you growing, Bethany?
Let's see. I've got some basil and tomatoes.
Wow.
And
making a caprese over here.
Pepper. Yeah.
Oh, peppers.
Still going strong. And some oregano.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we got the
nice.
Herbs going.
We got herbs. I got snap peas too.
Snap peas.
Ooh. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. They're real good.
Man. Okay. I have a lot of work to do today. I want to start growing. I want a garden.
Yeah.
None of us are growing potatoes though.
I know.
No.
Not yet.
No. I kind of want to now.
Yeah.
It looked difficult. Didn't look easy.
I mean, yeah, it looked difficult on Mars.
Right.
It'd probably be a lot easier here.
I kind of want to use manure. I don't know. If
what? Why not?
Yeah.
I want mine vacuum sealed. Am I the only one that wants that? That's pretty cool.
No, that's pretty gross. You are the only one.
I want it vacuum sealed and I want it by name. I want to know who did it. Because it said, like, it labeled each astronaut, which I thought was hilarious. It doesn't even matter. Like, they're so organized that they're not only vacuum sealing their poop, but they're vacuum sealing it by person. So I guess they have to, like, sign in when they go to the bathroom.
Didn't you see what he sat down in the toilet? There was a little sign-in sheet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're right.
That was a deal. Yeah. Over
so, that, so the computer knows who's,
know.
Yeah.
Who's poop.
If someone clogs the toilet, it'll be obvious who it was. But yeah, if you have something to plug, you have dates coming up, please.
I will be in San Diego Madhouse November 30th, December 1st. I will be in Minneapolis this coming weekend doing the 10,000 Laughs Festival.
Okay.
And I will be in Eau Claire, Wisconsin doing the Plus, which is going to be fun. And I'm every Friday, I'm in Santa Monica at the Westside Comedy Theater. Every Friday I'm in town. If I'm not in town, the show is still amazing. Go check it out.
Great. All right. Go see Neil, everybody.
Yeah,
Neil's fantastic.
Check it out, Neil.
Yeah.
Please. Check him out on the interweb.
Monica.
Where can they find you on the internet?
Oh, just my website, neilnanda.com. That's Neil with two E's because I am Indian. And you can also follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Neil Nanda.
Boom. Fantastic. And Bethany? Can we go to the JPL laboratory?
Yeah, you can check me out. I'm Googleable. first name Bethany, last name Ellman, Ehlmann. You can see what me and my group have been up to down at Caltech up at JPL. It's fun. And stay tuned for more news from Mars, from the rovers, from landing site workshops, and then InSight coming up.
Absolutely.
I can't wait.
And can we take a trip and go check out the facilities over there.
Take a trip
there.
To Mars? That'd be amazing. Can we sign me up too?
Yeah, can we all take a trip to Mars? No, to JPL.
Yeah, check out times for the JPL open house. They do it once a year. This year's already passed, but keep an eye out.
2019.
JPL open house, pretty fun.
Okay, that's awesome. It, guys. Thank you so much. I really had a great time.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, this is great.
All right, bye. Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh, and the executive prodaemon is Brett Kushner. Are you on Instagram and not following Bad Science? What's the point of your Instagram then? You can follow us at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show. We have all sorts of fun posts and quizzes that you are not going to want to miss. And feel free to send us an email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. Let us know what film you'd like us to do next or anything I may have missed in the episode. And next week, we're going to be doing It. It's October. It's Spooktober here. We're talking about spooky science. So we're doing It, the very scary 2017 version of the Stephen King novel. You get it. Okay. See you then. Bye.